We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
How about this? First play of the drive, Olesen. Quadri Olesen running over Caleb Farley. Olesen with a house call. You've got to be kidding.
Quadri Olesen making a mark at Pittsburgh last year, and that's what the Atlanta Falcons are hoping for this year out of their kind of a dive-into-the-rough rookie at running back, that he's going to be a bigger, stronger back. Welcome back to our coverage of Day 4 of the Atlanta Falcons training camp on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, your home of the Atlanta Falcons. And running back is certainly one of the areas that the Falcons are going to focus in on this season because they want to become more balanced under Dirk Koetter, and there have been some slight changes at that position for the Atlanta Falcons. Hugh Douglas, no more Tevin Coleman, and a little bit less of the kind of zone blocking and stretch runs that they've done, and a little bit more downhill is what Dirk Koetter seems to be aiming for with this running attack this season.
Yeah, and that's why you got a guy like Quadri Olesen, man. You know, about 6'2", about 225 pounds, big running back, man. And from when we had a chance to talk to him yesterday, sounds like he loves contact.
We did. We had a chance to talk with Quadri Olesen about what he can possibly begin, you know, his career and what he can bring to this team. And here is that conversation.
So, Quadri, first day in full pad, well, not full pads, first day in shoulder pads at this level. How did you feel today?
I feel good, especially, you know, for me, a runner of my style. I think I excel better in pads. You know, I'm able to show a little bit more of my physicality, a little bit more of my size and things like that. But really just getting out here and getting used to this level of speed and also, like, the level of contact that comes with it. You know, it was good, though. It was a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to the rest of camp.
So, wait, man, am I hearing you correctly when you're saying, like, the run with the pads? So you like contact?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, being a bigger back, you know, that's something that I've, you know, if you've seen my game, it's something that I've, you know, always tried to excel at and be good at, and really just being a powerful, you know, runner that runs behind his pads and, you know, really runs through a lot of arm tackles and things like that.
So that, does that mean you're going to be hunting up DBs? Like, when you get in the game, you're going to be hunting them up a little bit?
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely trying to bring a different style to our offense. You know, I think the good thing with our backfield, we got a lot of style of guys. Not everybody's the same. You know, we have a lot of guys that can do a lot of different.
Running back for the Atlanta Falcons, draft pick of the Atlanta Falcons out of Pitt, joining John and Hugh on the morning show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Your parents were both college basketball players, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. How did you fall into football?
My dad became a football coach, like, after he was done with basketball. You know, one of my older brothers played basketball, but, you know, my dad was a football coach for 20-something plus years, and he really just brought me up through Little League. You know, I've been playing football since I was about 6 years old before I, you know, I've been playing it my entire life. So football is definitely the route for me, you know, it got me here, so I think he made the right decision.
Yeah, but you have some hoops game, right? I mean...
Basketball isn't my strength. Like, if I was to describe myself as a basketball player, like, definitely a defender. Like, definitely a defender.
A lot of defense.
Yeah.
A lot of elbows being thrown, stuff like that.
Nah, clean defense.
You know what? Even though you're, like, really, really, really soft-spoken, I'm getting a little air of, like, a little nastiness about you. Am I right about that?
I mean, like, you got, like, you have to, like, you know, especially when you, you know, cross those lines. But, you know, for me... You know, when I'm on the football field, you know, you got to have what I think, what we all call that dog in you. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, once you step off the field, you know, I'm just regular. You know, I got a regular person mentality. But when I'm on the field, I definitely got that dog type of mentality every single day.
And talking about that running back battle that you're right in the middle of, Quadri Olesen, you're going to get a chance to show it in preseason. Devontae Freeman back with the team, that's huge for us Falcons fans, right? Because he's such a great player and a consummate pro. But then after that, there is a little interesting battle to watch who's going to get the most reps.
Definitely. Having Free, you know, I wasn't here last year, but just – you know, the way people talk about him, you know, when he wasn't really playing last year, you know, you can tell that the impact that he has on the team. But he's been a great teacher for me. He's been somebody that's been a great leader, somebody I can learn from. And, you know, he's one of the best in the league. So being a rookie and coming in with somebody that's a true veteran and handles himself like a pro every single day, you know, I learned so much from him. And it's not just football. It's a lot of different things. He teaches me life lessons. He teaches me so many things. So, you know, I'm really trying to really be a sponge and soak up all the information I can from him. And even somebody that like Ito and that was here for a year, you know, that's a long, you know, he's been through the rookie experience. So, you know, they do everything they can to help me. And, you know, I appreciate those guys.
Have you had a chance to go out anywhere in Atlanta? And if you have, where have you been so far?
So I've been downtown. You know, I've been to the aquarium downtown Atlanta. All the rookies took a trip to the Civil Rights and Human Rights Museum downtown as well. You know, I've been around a little bit. I haven't really got a huge chance to really explore, but I'm looking forward. I love the cities from what I've seen so far, and the people as well.
Yeah, you're getting ready for that first game. You believe it's only about a week away?
Definitely. It's fast. It's crazy. But definitely excited, and it came fast.
It did come fast, and we're going to see him next Thursday night playing in the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio against the Denver Broncos. So if you're coming out to camp today, Quadri Olsen, number 32 for the Atlanta Falcons. I think that was Jamal Anderson's number. Dirty Bird's number 32. Olsen going to be a guy you keep your eyes on. Last year, Hugh, in the running backs, Devontae goes through all of his injuries, only plays in two games, only has 14 carries for the entire season. Such a big weapon lost for the Atlanta Falcons. And while we talk about the other guys behind him, really the running back situation this year is going to rise or fall on his availability to this team.
Yeah, no question about that. He's a guy that can – he's very versatile. You heard Quadri basically say that everybody brings something a little different to the table. But I think that he's going to be the X factor because of the way that he runs the ball, his style of running, and that could be potentially a very big weapon to have back there. You're talking about if this offensive line blocks the way that we think it can block, and then, you know, talking to Dave Archer yesterday, talking about, you know, what this young man brings to the table and some of the games that he did when he watched him play, he basically said he runs with his pads down. And he's a little bit of a batting ram. He told me he got forced into duty a little bit early on in his career. And, you know, he then had to move to fullback. So he's a guy that can basically – he can get those tough yards for you, bottom line.
Yeah, a big, strong back, and Quadri Olsen could be, you know, a key member of this. You have Ito Smith and what we expect in year two of Ito Smith. And Brian Hill. Now, Brian Hill, you remember, kind of the forgotten guy here. Drafted out of Wyoming, they expected something of him, ended up on the practice squad, they cut him, they bring him back, and then Hugh, at the end of the season last year, because of necessity, he got some run. Not only did he get some run, but he performed at that time, and you want to talk about dog, Brian Hill showed maybe a little bit, and sometimes too much fire, you know, shoving people on the sidelines and running hard. So this battle is going to be pitched here. I mean, Olsen could have a dramatic impact, but I don't think the team's going to carry beyond three backs, so there could be a real running back battle behind Devontae Freeman.
Yeah, I think that's the case. And I would say probably, like, just with the short sampling size of this, that Quadri Olsen probably is going to be a guy that's going to be here. You know, I think that when you think about the style in which he runs and what he could potentially bring to the table, there's a good chance he might be here. It's a good chance they might try to – they might be in a conundrum a little bit, John, and carry four backs this year.
And how they do that is – and we saw this actually in practice yesterday. Ricky Ortiz, of course, was the fullback, and we've gone through some fullbacks ever since DeMarco left. But yesterday we talked about this, more you can do. Tight end Luke Stocker has played not only tight end but fullback, and they put him at fullback on a number of occasions in two-man sets yesterday. So if they believe that as little as they kind of use the fullback, if Stocker can – you know, adapt to that role as a, you know, the four or five times in the game that you'll actually, you know, use a fullback, then, you know, you can have the luxury of carrying four running backs if you're going to use Stocker as a hybrid fullback and tight end. So there's that too. Talking about the Falcons and the running back battle and see if they can improve their numbers. One of the worst running teams in the NFL last season. Have to improve that area. Everybody seems to be on the same page. We got to be, you know, a running and passing team. They have to have a running threat. And one of the great things about Olsen is if you watch him, is that, yes, he's a, what did you say, 6'2", 225, Hugh?
Yeah, yeah, that's what he got Daniel listed as.
And we think about him being kind of a battering ram, kind of a back to get you third down and one, something the Falcons were terrible at last year, or even a red zone guy. But when he does break contain and gets on the edge, he's got some hops. He's got the, what they call what deceptive speed. So he can get downfield in a hurry and break off some big runs. So, again, this will be the running attack of the Atlanta Falcons this year. Going back to this conversation that we had about elite offense and elite defense that Chuckery brought up last night, because I wanted to ask you, in this day and age, you said you'd rather have an elite defense. Falcons with an elite offense, number one offense in the NFL, went to the Super Bowl. Is it so geared to elite offenses? What Kansas City, you know, what they did last year, they were the worst defense in the NFL, and you saw what they were able to do. Is the game so geared to offense that it's – is there even a question as to whether you want to be an elite defense anymore, or do you just want to all be offense?
I think defense has evolved to the point where you don't need elite defenders. You just need a bunch of guys. I mean, a bunch of guys, and then, you know, some guys rise to the top and be dominant. But as a whole, I think, you know, you're going to have one or two guys, and then, you know, everybody else can just be a bit player. But it's definitely geared towards more offense than anything, because those are the guys that people come to see. You come to see the Aaron Rodgers. You come to see the Matt Ryans and things of that nature. And so that's why the game has evolved in the way that it has. And you heard Rich McKay say the other day, nobody wants to come and see the second-string quarterback play. Nobody wants to see that. You know, and it's become so much now that most of the – when you think about all the guys that get most of the love, it's the offensive players, which rightfully so, because they're the ones that make the big plays. You know, you still have some of your defenders out there that do their thing. But, man, to have an elite defense that people are intimidated by and they play that old-school brand of football, see, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about this, you know, you can't touch anybody and, you know, you can't 5-yard, you know, rule where you can't hit them over 5 yards or you know, engage them over 5 yards or corners or anything like that, or, you know, protecting the quarterback. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about that when you hit them or if you're breathing down their neck, they're looking around. They're trying to get the ball out of their hands a little bit quicker because they know you're coming. Stuff like that. I think those kind of defenses, because even when you don't make a play and you just have that presence around the quarterback, that makes them a little nervous. You make receivers a little nervous and have alligator arms knowing that, you know, when you catch that ball, you're going to earn it. You're going to earn every yard that you get. It's not that way anymore in the NFL. It's not.
Well, and of course, with this defense, as we watch them work out, and again, the Falcons will practice in pads again today, is, you know, all the nerves that we seem to have in and around injuries, because you've got, well, in Keanu Neal and Deion Jones and Rico Allen, three guys who could be up for comeback player of the year on this defensive side of the football. And you've already lost three guys. You lost Steven Means, you lost Michael Bennett, you lost J.J. Wilcox, which has already forced an early change, and that is Kamal Ishmael is going to move from linebacker back to safety for this team to fill the hole of J.J. Wilcox, which I think is a smart move on the part of the Atlanta Falcons, because Ishmael can certainly fill that role. But it's just really a case with this defense, Hugh. They're athletic enough to make the plays. They just have to stay healthy. I mean, really.
And you got to help keep your offense in the game. You got to be able to do that. You have to be a defense that can go out there in key situations. If your offense is doing their thing, eating up the clock, scoring a lot of points, make their offense one-dimensional. And when they are one-dimensional, you got to make plays. You got to get to the quarterback.
You got to get to the quarterback, you know, increase the number of sacks. They were poor in sacks last year. They were poor in interceptions. They only had 15 interceptions last season, less than about half of what the NFL leader did. And some of that was just simply Des Truffaut not holding onto the football because he had 4 or 5 he dropped. So it's, you know, and the fact that you lost Keanu Neal and Rico Allen for, you know, pretty much the season. So, I mean, those factors, you know, included. And, yes, as you watch the game next week, and we'll get into some of the things to focus in on, one of them will be Isaiah Oliver. Will he be that guy, Hugh, that takes that big second-year leap? And we get Isaiah Oliver, and we see what, you know, Dan Quinn liked in Oliver and his length and his athletic ability and why they were comfortable getting rid of Rocky Alford and going to Oliver as a starter at that corner opposite of Dez. So a lot to look at this defense, and going to be really kind of interesting because they're guys that are going to be playing for their jobs. Duke Riley out here. Everybody seems to be thinking Duke Riley's playing for his job this year.
Yeah, that's the consensus. You know, just sitting around talking to some of the pundits that, you know, we're out there chopping up a little bit, waiting for Duke Riley to shine. That's kind of the word that's been going around camp a little bit amongst the writers and everything. Was like, when is this guy going to step up? He, out of all the Coach Quinn's draft picks, He's the one right now that probably has a lot of microscopes on him, a lot of eyes, a lot of people looking to see what he's going to do.
Right, because, you know, I mean, you had, you know, Jalen Collins as the number two pick. Oh, Jalen had some nice moments. Jalen just couldn't get out of his own way personally in terms of that. But Duke Riley is a high pick in the second round, and he's lost his job at the moment, at least on paper, to a seventh-round pick in Foye Aluokun, and partly because of Duke, but also partly because I think the Falcons you know, whatever they saw in Foye Aluokun coming out of Yale that everybody else missed, that guy can play.
Yeah, he can. And I guess right now, Duke Riley's one shining moment here with the Atlanta Falcons is that time he pulled a truck. So far, that's his one shining moment.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Truck pulling.
Yeah, truck pulling. Yeah, that's not going to win you a job in the NFL. It's going to win you a job in truck pulling, which I think is on overnights on like ESPN truck or something like that. We are broadcasting live from Falcons training camp 2019. AT&T training camp, doors open in just over 15 minutes. We want to encourage you again, if you're outside and waiting to get in, or if you're headed over here for practice today, to come by our position, say hi, shake our hands, and then go to the tent next door. The kids can make up their signs for the day. You can grab some of the goodies that we have over here and put your name into the hopper, because today, once you just free to register, just throw your name in the hopper. We're going to draw at the end of camp for a Tony Gonzalez signed football, and somebody's going to leave Flowery Branch with a real prize today if you come by our setup at 92.9 The Game. A lot to get into, of course, as we start to peek ahead to the weekend, the Braves going on the road, and Atlanta United in a showdown tomorrow night that's going to say an awful lot about where the Five Stripes stand in the race for the top spot in the East when they go out and face the best team in the regular season in Major League Soccer. Jason Longshore will join us live to give us the very latest on what's going on with the team. Will we see some of the injured players return? That's next. Live from Flowery Branch on our continuing coverage of 2019 Atlanta Falcons training camp with John and Hugh on the morning show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game after a CBS Sports Minute.
Maybe for the first time this year, you know, we'll play a bit freer, you know, especially on the road where we haven't been that great, haven't gotten many results. So maybe that will get a little bit something going for us, you know, and we can go out there, play our game, and kind of see what happens. Definitely a good test right now, I think, where we can really get after it and kind of see how far we can push it.
That was Julian Gressel to Hugh and I as we get ready for huge game for Atlanta United tomorrow night against LAFC, and of course full coverage on your home with the Five Stripes, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, broadcasting live from Flowery Branch on an absolutely glorious late July morning, getting ready for the Atlanta Falcons to take the field and get ready for day four of practice. But for Atlanta United, Hugh, no practice. This is just the firing line. And anybody saying we got time, I don't think we have time anymore. The time's a waste, and this team has got to get it together, and soon, if not now.
I say this, John, for them to be in the position at the end, I mean, that's not a bad place to be. I stand by that wholeheartedly, because you talk about everything that has happened to them this season. If for them to be in second place right now, it's not a bad place to be. It's not where everybody wanted them to be. They thought it was going to be a little bit easier of a cakewalk, but when you have so many different changes that go on with the team and to be in the position that you're in, I think it's not a bad place to be.
Let's talk to the expert. We bring in Jason Longshore, of course, at Longshoe on Twitter, and his interview brought to you by Heineken 0.0, great taste and zero alcohol. Morning to you, Jason.
Morning, guys. How are you guys doing?
Awesome. We're up here at beautiful Flowery Branch hanging out. It's American football season. I was about to say football, but technically soccer's considered football as well, so I'm just trying to be PC in this situation.
Jason, tomorrow night, do you put a lot of stock into this? I mean, there's going to be a lot of emphasis, you know, defending MLS champions up against the team that has been by far the best regular season team in Major League Soccer this season, and at the moment the heavy favorites to at the very least, host the MLS Cup in LAFC.
Yeah, it's a huge match. It's at a great point in the season for Atlanta United, because it's not a defining match. It's a match where, you know, I like Julian Gressel and what he's had to say about that approach. You can go out and play your game. In a lot of ways, it reminds me of last year going to Red Bull Arena in September, later in the season. But Tata Martino went in there with the game plan. Sorry, my dog's a little excited about the call this morning. Tata Martino went in with a game plan to play their game, and it didn't work. But they learned from it, and it helped them win a championship later on. I think that's an approach that's going to happen here. Frank DeBoer is going to go in and play Atlanta United's game plan. They want to dominate the ball. They want to control the match. And they're going to learn how that plays out against a team like LAFC in their building.
Talking with Jason Longshore about this game. Jason, do you have any updates on some of the guys that we may see? Like, for example, when will we see Bello and Tito and Barco?
So Barco is with the team in Los Angeles. He was available for around 15 minutes or so on Sunday, but the way the match played out, it wasn't the best spot for him to come make his debut again. Villalba had a little bit of a setback, but he's expected to get back into contact kind of drills here in the next week. And Bello will see a little bit of time first with Atlanta United too, maybe a game just to get a little bit further testing, come recovering from that surgery. He's had a groin issue, honestly, since last year that just has been a nagging thing. He had surgery to correct it. Long term, that's going to be a big move for him, but it has delayed his return this season.
Talking with Jason Longshore about Atlanta United and LAFC tomorrow night on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Jason Longshore, in your eyes, has Pitty Martinez finally turned the corner?
Yeah, I think he's playing with some confidence, and I think we saw on Sunday just the overall quality that he has and his ability to come up big in big moments. And that's something that, you know, some players have and some players don't. And Pitty Martinez, for a moment like that where you need to find something, and for Pitty, it's honestly just throwing his body at a cross from Darlington Nagbe and ending up in the goal with the ball itself. That's what it takes at times. And then you see just the sheer audaciousness of the pass that he gives to Joseph Martinez to put the thing away. There's very few players, not even just in this league, in the world, that have the ability to hit that ball first time the way he did. I think Pitty is a player that people have a lot of expectations for in general, and this was the same in Argentina because you see that quality. It's hard to hit that level 100% of the time for 90 minutes, and I don't think Pitty's that kind of player. He's a player who has his peaks and valleys in matches. I really like these last couple of matches where he's been able to come off the bench and make an impact. Now, I think with Brandon Vasquez having a slight adductor issue in training yesterday, had to come out of training. He did make the trip. There's still a very good chance that he plays on Friday night. But that opens the door maybe for Pitty Martinez to start against LAFC on Friday night.
Jason Longshore joining us on the WayForward.com hotline, brought to you by Heineken 0.0. Game within a game, story within a story tomorrow night. Joseph gets that late goal even after missing the PK. Number 16 trying to defend his golden boot and going up against Carlos Vela, who is the number one scorer in the league. So here are the top two scorers, goal scorers in the league, mano a mano tomorrow night.
Yeah, I think Joseph, you know, does look at that stuff, but he would be happy with the 3 points, the win, and no goals, and Vela getting two if Atlanta walks out of there with a 3-2 or 4-2 win. And that's been the biggest, not difference in Joseph's mentality, but difference in the way he contributes to the team in 2019. He's far more involved in build-up play. He wants to connect with his teammates. He wants to drop into midfield. And what that does is it creates space for others, and it pulls defenders with him. And in a match like this one against LAFC, where their front five, front six is very good, but their back four, when they get tested, we saw what happened last weekend against the LA Galaxy, they do have some frailties. And if Joseph can get those two center backs moving around, stretched out, having to defend in space, that's going to create opportunities, not just for him, but for Pitty Martinez and for guys like Darlington Nagbe and Emerson Heineman to make runs into the 18.
So what kind of match are you expecting to see tomorrow night?
I think it's going to be wide open. I don't expect either team to come in and play defensively. I think both teams are going to come in and want to have that possession advantage, and only one can. That's the key to this one for me, is once you get 15, 20 minutes in, and you start to see a bit of the flavor of this one and who's going to have the ball more, who's going to be controlling the match more, how does the other team adjust? I think Atlanta has played more this season with less of the ball. They figured out ways to still control matches and still be effective without the ball. LAFC really hasn't had as much of that. And on the LA side of things, you know, they're coming off of their biggest bit of adversity this season, where they lost to their crosstown rivals. They've never beaten the LA Galaxy. There was all the talk going into that one from Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and he backed up everything he said. How do they come out? You know, this is the first time that there's been questions about LAFC in 2019. What's their response at home?
Again, LAFC and Atlanta United tomorrow night live on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Do you expect any changes to the 11 for this game? And are they going to come out 3-5-2 in their shape again to start the game? How do you see this happening?
It's tough. 3-5-2 is probably where you are as a default right now without a true left back. And this is a match where you're going to have to be very careful with your 3-5-2 because you don't want to end up in situations where your three center backs are 1v1 with their front three, including Carlos Vela, Diego Rossi, Adama Diomande. That's a very bad matchup for Atlanta. So you have to figure out, okay, does that mean a wing back is going to stay home a little bit more and give you a line of four? Does that mean one of the holding midfielders is going to drop in a little bit more and help give you an extra defender? You always want one free defender to be able to clean anything up. But without a true left back, you're kind of limited in what you can do with a line of four. Unless you're going to play Michael Parkhurst out wide, then you have some concerns about speed because Vela and Rossi both can get in behind you. I think the 3-5-2 is the way you'll play, but I think it'll look a little different. And my biggest question in terms of the 11, one is the Brandon Vasquez issue up top. Is he going to be able to go? If not, Pitty Martinez more than likely slots in there. And on the left side, you know, we've seen Dion Pereira play there against Houston. We saw Justin Merrim play there against D.C. Neither one are true defensive wing backs. They're both attacking players who have had to be called upon to do that role. Merrim said it was the first time he'd ever played that role in his career. This is a game where an attacking player playing in that defensive role can get exposed a bit. Do you maybe see Franco Escobar slide over there, give you a little more security defensively, and play a Michael Parkhurst or a Florentin Pogba, who did make the trip, as another center back? Those are the questions for Frank De Boer. It's a tricky one because LAFC has been that team this season.
Always a pleasure, Jason. We really look forward to this showdown tomorrow night. We'll be listening to you and Mike Connie's call from Los Angeles. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
You the man.
Jason Longshore joining us on the WayForward.com hotline. Again, you can hear the showdown between the defending champions of the best regular season team so far in the Major League Soccer schedule, and that is Atlanta United at LAFC tomorrow night on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Well, the doors are open, the fans are pouring in, and our coverage of Falcons training camp continues on your home of the Falcons, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
You get what you emphasize, and as coaches, we all, especially in the early part of the season, the assistants especially, there's so much of the scheme and all the technique, and the technique a lot of times is the icing around it. Let's make sure the cake is the main thing. That's the ball, the way you attack, the style, and the attitude. So if this foot works wrong or that foot works wrong, yeah, we're going to get that corrected, but, like, never losing mindset for the ball.
Gates are open at Flowery Branch. Our coverage of the 2019 AT&T Falcons training camp continues with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And, Hugh, you couldn't ask for a more glorious day. Beautiful day for football.
Yeah, man, especially coming off that first day being in shoulder pads. To have a day like this, it got to feel pretty good to the fellas out there, man, you know. I mean, it's one thing to, you know, you just get acclimated to carrying pads and everything, and then to have that sun beating you down. It's a nice little cool breeze, man. It make you feel like you can do anything today.
Yeah, Matt Tabiku, of course, is the main guy at AtlantaFalcons.com and the columnist that everybody talks to. He's standing by. He'll join us here at the top of the hour. We'll get his inside information on what's going on with the Falcons. And as we count down, we are now less than a month away from the start of the college football season, which will be August 24th. Just a couple of quick college football notes. You know, Hugh, one of the things that's true in college football is that there is an arms race among all these schools to build the best training camp facility, the best locker room, the best, you know, library, everything you could possibly imagine. And LSU has spent a lot of money and built a locker room that has everybody buzzing because it has sleeping pods, among other things. Have you seen these pictures out there, everybody? Have you seen these? I know you have, Hugh. It's these locker rooms are insane how nice they are.
Man, I tell you, between that and the one that I saw with the Oregon Ducks have, That's how you get kids to come to school there, man, because you talk about these elite programs like that, John, you always had to do something to separate yourself from everybody else. And LSU has just taken it to the next level. That's basically what they've done. They've taken the locker room game to the next level. And to see these locker rooms, man, it's just like, wow. And you know, from that, from watching that and then watching Last Chance U the last couple of nights and seeing how kids get excited about the amenities that they have in school, that's how you get kids to come there, you know, with the nice uniforms, man, and the nice locker room facilities and a great room. Kids love that.
Yeah, it's really something. I encourage you, if you have a chance, just Google LSU locker room, because the pictures of it. My only drawback is I'm not a fan of the color purple. But aside from that, I would say that it's just unbelievable. Sleeping pods, you know. I mean, forget about, you know, a place to hang your helmet. I mean, it just is. I never thought I'd see stuff like this when it comes to that. Another little interesting story that's suddenly gone viral. Pat Fitzgerald, who's the quality, tremendous head coach of the Northwestern Wildcats, was talking at the Big Ten about why attendance is down in college football, and it was down slightly last year. And he had a unique take on it, and his take on it went viral to the point where over 4 million views on this video, and this is why Pat Fitzgerald generally thinks attendance in college football may be under a little bit of pressure.
A lot of younger people and younger fans intake is all through technology. And I mean, you watch a concert and everybody's holding their phone up. Like, listen, watch, take it in, create a memory. Because they don't go back and watch the videos. They just want to post it on their social media, which is pathetic because it creates a society of, look at me, isn't my life great? Even though when they go home, they're like, I hate myself, I hate my life, everything's wrong.
Yeah, he seems to think social media is the reason that maybe college football attendance is down, because they're not getting through to the young fans who don't want to actually show up at games. They just want to play on their phones.
I don't know if I feel that strongly about his take on it, but social media has changed the way a lot of things are done nowadays. There's no question about that. There's like you know, even when you talk about interacting with people, we interact more on social media and through apps than we do actually with each other. I mean, that's just the way that it goes, and we do it, John. You know, we're posting pictures here at camp. I mean, trying to get people, you know, to interact with our Twitter feeds and our Facebook feeds and all the other good stuff to see what we're doing, you know, in order to get hits. Everybody's doing that nowadays. So it's one of those things where that's just the road that society's going down. As far as going to games and stuff, I mean, that doesn't answer the question for attendance, because you would think that if people wanted to go to the game, they would actually go to take selfies of them being at the game. So I don't know. I don't know if I go down that route with it, but we have changed the way that we do certain things and as far as our forms of entertainment are concerned. Because he's right about that. I was looking at yesterday. They had Wind Down Wednesday. I forgot somewhere. Was it in College Park or somewhere? They had a concert. It was like I was at the concert because I saw everybody's social media post of videos of being at the Wind Down Wednesday. So, yeah, I get it, but I don't know if that's the reason why college football attendance is down.
Yeah, well, in the SEC, and I had to look up the numbers because I was curious as to, you know, I've heard this, but the attendance is really not off that much. And for example, in the SEC last year, Hugh, attendance was down an average of about 1,000 fans a game, okay? But, and here's the but in that, the reason for that is because Tennessee's attendance was off 10,000 fans a game because of the fact that the Tennessee Vols aren't very good right now.
Yeah.
And if Tennessee were selling out like they normally do, instead of averaging 102,000, Tennessee averaged 92,000. Therefore, the entire SEC was down 1,000 fans a game. So I don't know. I mean, you still have 7 or 8 schools that average over 100,000 fans a game. You have 10 schools that average over 90,000 fans a game. You know, I mean, you're asking an awful lot. It's not like attendance of college football. In terms of, you know, individual crowds, college football draws the biggest crowds of any sport by far.
Yeah.
And so I'm not really sure the attendance is really all that stressed, at least at the elite level of college football.
And then you think about it like this, too. Some of those games you're probably going to are garbage games. Like, you think, but just take, for example, this Notre Dame-Georgia game that's coming up. That's going to be packed. Because those two good teams, everybody wants to see that matchup. You're not going to see Georgia play Little Sisters of the Poor. You're not going to see that game because that's a blowout.
Right, Murray State and Arkansas State before they play Notre Dame.
Yeah, that probably won't be a song.
You know what I mean? See, and, you know, that's the problem. I mean, you got to get away from these, and that's what some of the coaches are saying. Maybe we go to a strict Power 5 schedule. And this year, by the way, the SEC, and credit to the SEC, because nobody else can – and again, I know some fans out there, you think that I just am, you know, a mouthpiece for the SEC. I'm not really even an SEC fan. I'm a Big Ten fan. But the SEC is playing everybody. Auburn's playing Oregon. LSU's playing Texas. You can't deny this. Florida against Miami. Georgia against Notre Dame. Nobody's dodging anybody out there when it comes to the SEC. Texas A&M is playing Clemson. So the SEC is taking it upon himself, you know, as far as its non-conference schedule, to have by far the biggest intersectional and national games in non-conference play at the beginning of the year. I mean, just – and it's not even close.
Yeah, man, and those are the games that people want to see. They want to see a competitive matchup. They want to see competitive confrontations. Nobody trying to see no game that's not, you know, you waste your time going, you got to go park, you got to wait in line for so-and-so. Well, I guess the game no good, you're not waiting in line. But just being there in the building and there's no energy in the building, nobody wants to go through all that, man.
Yeah, I mean, as much as you like the idea of your team winning a game 52-6.
Nah, that's not an enjoyable game for some folks.
Right. At the same time, it's really, okay, can we just move past this game and get to the games that count, games that matter? And, of course, Georgia Notre Dame will matter. We'll see exactly what last I checked, it was like $5.25 to get in price, 5.25. And my guess is here on July the 26th that's going to go up by September the 21st in that 8 o'clock kick in Athens. For all the non-conference games this year, the most highly anticipated non-conference game of the year, Georgia and Notre Dame, at least early in the season. Broadcasting live from 2019 AT&T Atlanta Falcons training camp, we're going to get the inside from Matt Tabeek. He is the lead columnist and inside man for AtlantaFalcons.com, and he's going to join us on set live as we continue our coverage of day 4 of Atlanta Falcons training camp. We encourage everybody who's coming to come in the doors and go over to our tent and sign up for free for our drawing for a Tony Gonzalez autographed football over at our tent. Sign up for free and do that as we continue with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.